His eyes went blank, curiously dead as he turned away. And they were gone. We stood there, the others looking away from me as the tears streaked noiselessly down my face. The silent moment dragged on, and then Esme's phone vibrated in her hand. It flashed to her ear. "Now," she said. Rosalie stalked out the front door without another glance in my direction, but Esme touched my cheek as she passed. "Be safe," her whisper lingered behind them as they slipped out the door. I heard my truck start thunderously and then fade away. Jasper and Alice waited. Alice's phone seemed to be at her ear before it buzzed. "Edward says the woman is on Esme's trail. I'll get the car." She vanished into the shadows the way Edward had gone. Jasper and I looked at each other. He stood across the length of the entryway from me, being careful. "You're wrong, you know," he said quietly. "What?" I gasped. "I can feel what you're feeling now, and you are worth it." "I'm not," I mumbled. "If anything happens to them, it will be for nothing." "You're wrong," he repeated, smiling kindly at me. I heard nothing, but then Alice stepped through the front door and came toward me with her arms held out. "May I?" she asked. "You're the first one to ask permission," I smiled wryly. She lifted me in her slender arms as easily as Emmett had, shielding me protectively. And then we flew out the door, leaving the lights bright behind us. Chapter 20, Impatience. When I woke up, I was confused. My thoughts were hazy, still twisted up in dreams and nightmares. It took me longer than it should have to realize where I was. This room was too bland to belong anywhere but in a hotel. The bedside lamps bolted to the tables were a dead giveaway, as were the long drapes made from the same fabric as the bedspread, and the generic watercolor prints on the walls. I tried to remember how I got here, but nothing came at first. I did remember the sleek black car, the glass in the windows darker than that on a limousine. The engine was almost silent, though we'd raced across the black freeways at more than twice the legal speed. And I remembered Alice sitting with me on the dark leather back seat. Somehow, during the long night, my head had ended up against her granite neck. My closeness didn't seem to bother her at all, and her cool, hard skin was oddly comforting to me. The front of her thin cotton shirt was cold, damp with the tears that streamed from my eyes until red and sore they ran dry. Sleep had evaded me. My aching eyes strained open, even though the night finally ended, and dawn broke over a low peak somewhere in California. The gray light, streaking across the cloudless sky, stung my eyes. But I couldn't close them. When I did, the images that flashed all too vividly, like still slides behind my lids, were unbearable. Charlie's broken expression, Edward's brutal snarl, teeth bared, Rosalie's resentful glare, the keen-eyed scrutiny of the tracker, the dead look in Edward's eyes after he kissed me the last time. I couldn't stand to see them, so I fought against my weariness and the sun rose higher. I was still awake when we came through a shallow mountain pass, and the sun, behind us now, reflected off the tiled rooftops of the Valley of the Sun. I didn't have enough emotion left to be surprised that we'd made a 3-day journey in one. I stared blankly at the wide, flat expanse laid out in front of me. Phoenix, the palm trees, the scrubby creosote, the haphazard lines of the intersecting freeways, the green swaths of golf courses and turquoise splotches of swimming pools, all submerged in a thin smog and embraced by the short, rocky ridges that weren't really big enough to be called mountains. The shadows of the palm trees slanted across the freeway, defined, sharper than I remembered, paler than they should be. Nothing could hide in these shadows. The bright open freeway seemed benign enough, but I felt no relief, no sense of homecoming. "Which way to the airport, Bella?" Jasper had asked, and I flinched, though his voice was quite soft and unalarming. It was the first sound, besides the purr of the car, to break the long night silence. "Stay on the I-10, I'd answered automatically. "We'll pass right by it." My brain had worked slowly through the fog of sleep deprivation. "Are we flying somewhere?" I'd asked Alice. "No, but it's better to be close, just in case." I remembered beginning the loop around Sky Harbor International, but not ending it. I suppose that must have been when I'd fallen asleep. Though now that I'd chased the memories down, I did have a vague impression of leaving the car. The sun was just falling behind the horizon, my arm draped over Alice's shoulder, and her arm firm around my waist, dragging me along as I stumbled through the warm, dry shadows. I had no memory of this room. I looked at the digital clock on the nightstand. The red numbers claimed it was 3 o'clock, but they gave no indication if it was night or day. No edge of light escaped the thick curtains, but the room was bright with the light from the lamps. I rose stiffly and staggered to the window, pulling back the drapes. It was dark outside, 3 in the morning then. My room looked out on a deserted section of the freeway and the new long-term parking garage for the airport. It was slightly comforting to be able to pinpoint time and place. I looked down at myself. I was still wearing Esme's clothes, and they didn't fit very well at all. I looked around the room, glad when I discovered my duffel bag on top of the low dresser. I was on my way to find new clothes when a light tap on the door made me jump. "Can I come in?" Alice asked. I took a deep breath. "Sure." She walked in and looked me over cautiously. "You look like you could sleep longer," she said. I just shook my head. She drifted silently to the curtains and closed them securely before turning back to me. "We'll need to stay inside," she told me. "Okay." My voice was hoarse. It cracked. "Thirsty?" she asked. I shrugged. "I'm okay. How about you?" "Nothing unmanageable," she smiled. "I ordered some food for you. It's in the front room. Edward reminded me that you have to eat a lot more frequently than we do." I was instantly more alert. "He called?" "No," she said, and watched as my face fell. "It was before we left." She took my hand carefully and led me through the door into the living room of the hotel suite. I could hear a low buzz of voices coming from the TV. Jasper sat motionlessly at the desk in the corner, his eyes watching the news with no glimmer of interest. I sat on the floor next to the coffee table, where a tray of food waited, and began picking at it without noticing what I was eating. Alice perched on the arm of the sofa and stared blankly at the TV like Jasper. I ate slowly, watching her, turning now and then to glance quickly at Jasper. It began to dawn on me that they were too still. They never looked away from the screen, though commercials were playing now. I pushed the tray away, my stomach abruptly uneasy. Alice looked down at me. "What's wrong, Alice?" I asked. "Nothing's wrong." Her eyes were wide, honest, and I didn't trust them. "What do we do now?" "We wait for Carlisle to call." "And should he have called by now?" I could see that I was near the mark. Alice's eyes flitted from mine to the phone on top of her leather bag and back. "What does that mean?" My voice quavered and I fought to control it. "That he hasn't called yet." "It just means that they don't have anything to tell us." But her voice was too even, and the air was harder to breathe. Jasper was suddenly beside Alice, closer to me than usual. "Bella," he said in a suspiciously soothing voice, "you have nothing to worry about. You are completely safe here." "I know that." "Then why are you frightened?" he asked, confused. He might feel the tenor of my emotions, but he couldn't read the reasons behind them. "You heard what Laurent said." My voice was just a whisper, but I was sure they could hear me. "He said James was lethal. What if something goes wrong and they get separated? If something happens to any of them, Carlisle, Emmett, Edward," I gulped. If that wild female hurts Esme, my voice had grown higher, a note of hysteria beginning to rise in it. How could I live with myself when it's my fault? None of you should be risking yourselves for me. Bella, Bella, stop, he interrupted me, his words pouring out so quickly they were hard to understand. You're worrying about all the wrong things, Bella. Trust me on this. None of us are in jeopardy. You are under too much strain as it is. Don't add to it with wholly unnecessary worries. Listen to me, he ordered, for I had looked away. Our family is strong. Our only fear is losing you. But why should you? Alice interrupted this time, touching my cheek with her cold fingers. It's been almost a century that Edward's been alone. Now he's found you. You can't see the changes that we see, we who have been with him for so long. Do you think any of us want to look into his eyes for the next 100 years if he loses you? My guilt slowly subsided as I looked into her dark eyes. But even as the calm spread over me, I knew I couldn't trust my feelings with Jasper there. It was a very long day. We stayed in the room. Alice called down to the front desk and asked them to ignore our maid service for now. The window stayed shut, the TV on, though no one watched it. At regular intervals, food was delivered for me. A silver phone resting on Alice's bag seemed to grow bigger as the hours passed. My babysitters handled the suspense better than I did. As I fidgeted and paced, they simply grew more still. Two statues, whose eyes followed me imperceptibly as I moved. I occupied myself with memorizing the room, the stripe pattern of the couches, tan, peach, cream, dull gold, and tan again. Sometimes I stared at the abstract prints, randomly finding pictures in the shapes, like I'd found pictures in the clouds as a child. I traced a blue hand, a woman combing her hair, a cat stretching. But when the pale red circle became a staring eye, I looked away. As the afternoon wore on, I went back to bed, simply for something to do. I hoped that by myself in the dark, I could give in to the terrible fears that hovered on the edge of my consciousness, unable to break through under Jasper's careful supervision. But Alice followed me casually, as if by some coincidence she had grown tired of the front room at the same time. I was beginning to wonder exactly what sort of instructions Edward had given her. I lay across the bed and she sat, legs folded, next to me. I ignored her at first, suddenly tired enough to sleep. But after a few minutes, the panic that had held off in Jasper's presence began to make itself known. I gave up on the idea of sleep quickly then, curling up into a small ball, wrapping my arms around my legs. Alice? I asked. Yes? I kept my voice very calm. What do you think they're doing? Carlyle wanted to lead the tracker as far north as possible. Wait for him to get close, and then turn and ambush him. Esme and Rosalie were supposed to head west as long as they could keep the female behind them. If she turned around, they were to head back to Forks and keep an eye on your dad. So I imagine things are going well if they can't call. It means the tracker is close enough that they don't want him to overhear. And Esme? I think she must be back in Forks. She won't call if there's any chance the female will overhear. I expect they're all just being very careful. Do you think they're safe, really? Bella, how many times do we have to tell you that there's no danger to us? Would you tell me the truth, though? Yes, I will always tell you the truth. Her voice was earnest. I deliberated for a moment and decided she meant it. Tell me then, how do you become a vampire? My question caught her off guard. She was quiet. I rolled over to look at her, and her expression seemed ambivalent. Edward doesn't want me to tell you that, she said firmly, but I sensed she didn't agree. That's not fair. I think I have a right to know. I know. I looked at her waiting. She sighed. He'll be extremely angry. It's none of his business. This is between you and me. Alice, as a friend, I'm begging you. And we were friends now, somehow. She must have known we would be all along. She looked at me with her splendid, wise eyes, choosing. I'll tell you the mechanics of it, she said finally. But I don't remember it myself, and I've never done it or seen it done, so keep in mind that I can only tell you the theory. I waited. As predators, we have a glut of weapons in our physical arsenal. Much, much more than really necessary. The strength, the speed, the acute senses, not to mention those of us like Edward, Jasper, and I who have extra senses as well. And then, like a carnivorous flower, we are physically attractive to our prey. I was very still, remembering how pointedly Edward had demonstrated the same concept for me in the meadow. She smiled a wide, ominous smile. We have another fairly superfluous weapon. We're also venomous, she said, her teeth glistening. The venom doesn't kill. It's merely incapacitating. It works slowly, spreading through the bloodstream, so that once bitten, our prey is in too much physical pain to escape us. Mostly superfluous, as I said. If we're that close, the prey doesn't escape. Of course, there are always exceptions. Carlisle, for example. So, if the venom is left to spread, I murmured. It takes a few days for the transformation to be complete, depending on how much venom is in the bloodstream, how close the venom enters to the heart. As long as the heart keeps beating, the poison spreads, healing, changing the body as it moves through it. Eventually the heart stops, and the conversion is finished. But all that time, every minute of it, a victim would be wishing for death. I shivered. It's not pleasant, you see. Edward said that it was very hard to do. I don't quite understand, I said. We're also like sharks in a way. Once we taste the blood, or even smell it for that matter, it becomes very hard to keep from feeding. Sometimes impossible. So you see, to actually bite someone, to taste the blood, it would begin the frenzy. It's difficult on both sides. The bloodlust on the one hand, the awful pain on the other. Why do you think you don't remember? I don't know. For everyone else, the pain of transformation is the sharpest memory they have of their human life. I remember nothing of being human. Her voice was wistful. We lay silently, wrapped in our individual meditations. The seconds ticked by, and I had almost forgotten her presence. I was so enveloped in my thoughts. Then, without any warning, Alice leapt from the bed, landing lightly on her feet. My head jerked up as I stared at her, startled. Something's changed. Her voice was urgent, and she wasn't talking to me anymore. She reached the door at the same time Jasper did. He had obviously heard our conversation and her sudden exclamation. He put his hands on her shoulders and guided her back to the bed, sitting her on the edge. What do you see? He asked intently, staring into her eyes. Her eyes were focused on something very far away. I sat close to her, leaning in to catch her low, quick voice. I see a room. It's long, and there are mirrors everywhere. The floor is wooden. He's in the room, and he's waiting. There's gold, a gold stripe across the mirrors. Where is the room? I don't know. Something is missing. Another decision hasn't been made yet. How much time? It's soon. He'll be in the mirror room today, or maybe tomorrow. It all depends. He's waiting for something, and he's in the dark now. Jasper's voice was calm, methodical, as he questioned her in a practiced way. What is he doing? He's watching TV? No, he's running a VCR in the dark, in another place. Can you see where he is? No, it's too dark. And the mirror room, what else is there? Just the mirrors and the gold? It's a band around the room. And there's a black table with a big stereo and a TV. He's touching the VCR there, but he doesn't watch the way he does in the dark room. This is the room where he waits. Her eyes drifted, then focused on Jasper's face. There's nothing else? She shook her head. They looked at each other motionless. What does it mean? I asked. Neither of them answered for a moment, then Jasper looked at me. It means the tracker's plans have changed. He's made a decision that will lead him to the mirror room and the dark room. But we don't know where those rooms are? No. But we do know that he won't be in the mountains north of Washington being hunted. He'll elude them. Alice's voice was bleak. Should we call? I asked. They traded a serious look, undecided. And the phone rang. Alice was across the room before I could lift my head to look at it. She pushed a button and held the phone to her ear, but she didn't speak first. Carlisle, she breathed. She didn't seem surprised or relieved the way I felt. Yes, she said, glancing at me. She listened for a long moment. I just saw him. She described again the vision she'd seen. Whatever made him get on that plane, it was leading him to those rooms. She paused. Yes, Alice said into the phone, and then she spoke to me. Bella? She held the phone out toward me. I ran to it. Hello? I breathed. Bella, Edward said. Oh, Edward, I was so worried. Bella, he sighed in frustration. I told you not to worry about anything but yourself. It was so unbelievably good to hear his voice. I felt the hovering cloud of despair lighten and drift back as he spoke. Where are you? We're outside of Vancouver. Bella, I'm sorry, we lost him. He seems suspicious of us. He's careful to stay just far enough away that I can't hear what he's thinking. But he's gone now. It looks like he got on a plane. We think he's heading back to Forks to start over. I could hear Alice filling in Jasper behind me, her quick words blurring together into a humming noise. I know. Alice saw that he got away. You don't have to worry, though. He won't find anything to lead him to you. You just have to stay there and wait till we find him again. I'll be fine. Is Esme with Charlie? Yes. The female has been in town. She went to the house, but while Charlie was at work. She hasn't gone near him, so don't be afraid. He's safe with Esme and Rosalie watching. What is she doing? Probably trying to pick up the trail. She's been all through the town during the night. Rosalie traced her through the airport, all the roads around town, the school. She's digging, Bella, but there's nothing to find. And you're sure Charlie's safe? Yes, Esme won't let him out of her sight, and we'll be there soon. If the tracker gets anywhere near Forks, we'll have him. I miss you, I whispered. I know, Bella. Believe me, I know. It's like you've taken half myself away with you. Come and get it then, I challenged. Soon as I possibly can. I will make you safe first, his voice was hard. I love you, I reminded him. Could you believe that despite everything I've put you through, I love you too? Yes, I can, actually. I'll come for you soon. I'll be waiting. As soon as the phone went dead, the cloud of depression began to creep over me again. I turned to give the phone back to Alice and found her and Jasper bent over the table, where Alice was sketching on a piece of hotel stationery. I leaned on the back of the couch, looking over her shoulder. She drew a room, long, rectangular, with a thinner square section at the back. The wooden planks that made up the floor stretched lengthwise across the room. Down the walls were lines denoting the breaks in the mirrors. And then wrapping around the walls, waist high, a long band. The band Alice said was gold. It's a ballet studio, I said, suddenly recognizing the familiar shapes. They looked at me, surprised. Do you know this room? Jasper's voice sounded calm, but there was an undercurrent of something I couldn't identify. Alice bent her head to her work, her hand flying across the page now, the shape of an emergency exit taking shape against the back wall, the stereo and TV on a low table by the front right corner. It looks like a place I used to go for dance lessons when I was 8 or 9. It was shaped just the same. I touched the page where the square section jutted out, narrowing the back part of the room. That's where the bathrooms were. The doors were through the other dance floor. But the stereo was here, pointed to the left corner. It was older and there wasn't a TV. There was a window in the waiting room. You would see the room from this perspective if you looked through it. Alice and Jasper were staring at me. Are you sure it's the same room? Jasper asked, still calm. No, not at all. I suppose most dance studios would look the same. The mirrors, the bar. I traced my finger along the ballet bar set against the mirrors. It's just the shape that looked familiar. I touched the door, set in exactly the same place as the one I remembered. Would you have any reason to go there now? Alice asked, breaking my reverie. No, I haven't been there in almost 10 years. I was a terrible dancer. They always put me in the back for recitals, I admitted. So there's no way it could be connected with you? Alice asked intently. No, I don't even think the same person owns it. I'm sure it's just another dance studio somewhere. Where was the studio you went to? Jasper asked in a casual voice. It was just around the corner from my mom's house. I used to walk there after school, I said, my voice trailing off. I didn't miss the look they exchanged. Here in Phoenix, then? His voice was still casual. Yes, I whispered. 58th Street and Cactus. We all sat in silence, staring at the drawing. Alice, is that phone safe? Yes, she reassured me. The number would just trace back to Washington. Then I can use it to call my mom? I thought she was in Florida. She is, but she's coming home soon, and she can't come back to that house while... My voice trembled. I was thinking about something Edward had said, about the red-haired female at Charlie's house, at the school, where my records would be. How will you reach her? They don't have a permanent number except at the house. She's supposed to check her messages regularly. Jasper? Alice asked. He thought about it. I don't think there's any way it could hurt. Be sure you don't say where you are, of course. I reached eagerly for the phone and dialed the familiar number. It rang 4 times, and then I heard my mom's breezy voice telling me to leave a message. Mom, I said after the beep, it's me. Listen, I need you to do something. It's important. As soon as you get this message, call me at this number. Alice was already at my side, writing the number for me on the bottom of her picture. I read it carefully, twice. Please don't go anywhere until you talk to me. Don't worry, I'm okay, but I have to talk to you right away, no matter how late you get this call, all right? I love you, Mom. Bye. I closed my eyes and prayed with all my might that no unforeseen change of plans would bring her home before she got my message. I settled into the sofa, nibbling on a plate of leftover fruit, anticipating a long evening. I thought about calling Charlie, but I wasn't sure if I should be home by now or not. I concentrated on the news, watching out for stories about Florida, or about spring training, strikes or hurricanes or terrorist attacks, anything that might send them home early. Immortality must grant endless patience. Neither Jasper nor Alice seemed to feel the need to do anything at all. For a while, Alice sketched the vague outline of the dark room from her vision, as much as she could see in the light from the TV. But when she was done, she simply sat, looking at the blank walls with her timeless eyes. Jasper, too, seemed to have no urge to pace, or peek through the curtains, or run screaming out the door the way I did. I must have fallen asleep on the couch, waiting for the phone to ring again. The touch of Alice's cold hands woke me briefly as she carried me to the bed, but I was unconscious again before my head hit the pillow. Chapter 21. Phone Call. I could feel it was too early again when I woke, and I knew I was getting the schedule of my days and nights slowly reversed. I lay in my bed and listened to the quiet voices of Alice and Jasper in the other room. That they were loud enough for me to hear at all was strange. I rolled till my feet touched the floor and then staggered to the living room. The clock on the TV said it was just after 2 in the morning. Alice and Jasper were sitting together on the sofa, Alice sketching again while Jasper looked over her shoulder. They didn't look up when I entered, too engrossed in Alice's work. I crept to Jasper's side to peek. "Did she see something more?" I asked him quietly. "Yes, something's brought him back to the room with the VCR, but it's light now." I watched as Alice drew a square room with dark beams across its low ceiling. The walls were paneled in wood, a little too dark, out of date. The floor had a dark carpet with a pattern in it. There was a large window against the south wall, and an opening through the west wall led to the living room. One side of that entrance was stone, a large tan stone fireplace that was open to both rooms. The focus of the room from this perspective, the TV and VCR, balanced on a too small wooden stand, were in the southwest corner of the room. An aged sectional sofa curved around in front of the TV, a round coffee table in front of it. "The phone goes there," I whispered, pointing. Two pairs of eternal eyes stared at me. "That's my mother's house." Alice was already off the couch, phone in hand, dialing. I stared at the precise rendering of my mother's family room. Uncharacteristically, Jasper slid closer to me. He lightly touched his hand to my shoulder, and the physical contact seemed to make his calming influence stronger. The panic stayed dull, unfocused. Alice's lips were trembling with the speed of her words, the low buzzing impossible to decipher. I couldn't concentrate. "Bella," Alice said. I looked at her numbly. "Bella, Edward is coming to get you. He and Emmett and Carlisle are going to take you somewhere, to hide you for a while." "Edward is coming?" The words were like a life vest holding my head above the flood. "Yes, he's catching the first flight out of Seattle. We'll meet him at the airport, and you'll leave with him." "But my mother, he came here for my mother, Alice." Despite Jasper, the hysteria bubbled up in my voice. "Jasper and I will stay till she's safe." "I can't win, Alice. You can't guard everyone I know forever. Don't you see what he's doing? He's not tracking me at all. He'll find someone. He'll hurt someone I love. Alice, I can't." "We'll catch him, Bella," she assured me. "And what if you get hurt, Alice? Do you think that's okay with me? Do you think it's only my human family he can hurt me with?" Alice looked meaningfully at Jasper. A deep, heavy fog of lethargy washed over me, and my eyes closed without my permission. My mind struggled against the fog, realizing what was happening. I forced my eyes open and stood up, stepping away from Jasper's hand. "I don't want to go back to sleep," I snapped. I walked to my room and shut the door, slammed it really, so I could be free to go to pieces privately. This time Alice didn't follow me. For 3.5 hours, I stared at the wall, curled in a ball, rocking. My mind went around in circles, trying to come up with some way out of this nightmare. There was no escape, no reprieve. I could see only one possible end looming darkly in my future. The only question was, how many other people would be hurt before I reached it? The only solace, the only hope I had left, was knowing that I would see Edward soon. Maybe if I could just see his face again, I would also be able to see the solution that eluded me now. When the phone rang, I returned to the front room, a little ashamed of my behavior. I hoped I hadn't offended either of them, that they would know how grateful I was for the sacrifices they were making on my account. Alice was talking as rapidly as ever, but what caught my attention was that, for the first time, Jasper was not in the room. I looked at the clock. It was 5:30 in the morning. "They're just boarding their plane," Alice told me. "They'll land at 9:45. Just a few more hours to keep breathing till he was here." "Where's Jasper?" "He went to check out." "You aren't staying here?" "No, we're relocating closer to your mother's house." My stomach twisted uneasily at her words. But the phone rang again, distracting me. She looked surprised, but I was already walking forward, reaching hopefully for the phone. "Hello?" Alice asked. "No, she's right here." She held the phone out to me. "Your mother," she mouthed. "Hello? Bella? Bella?" It was my mother's voice, in a familiar tone I had heard 1,000 times in my childhood, any time I'd gotten too close to the edge of the sidewalk or strayed out of her sight in a crowded place. It was the sound of panic. I sighed. I'd been expecting this, though I tried to make my message as unalarming as possible without lessening the urgency of it. "Calm down, Mom," I said in my most soothing voice, walking slowly away from Alice. Wasn't sure if I could lie as convincingly with her eyes on me. "Everything is fine, okay? Just give me a minute and I'll explain everything, I promise." I paused, surprised that she hadn't interrupted me yet. "Mom?"
"Be very careful not to say anything until I tell you to."
The voice I heard now was as unfamiliar as it was unexpected. It was a man's tenor voice, a very pleasant generic voice, the kind of voice that you heard in the background of luxury car commercials. He spoke very quickly.
"Now, I don't need to hurt your mother, so please do exactly as I say and she'll be fine."
He paused for a minute while I listened in mute horror.
"That's very good," he congratulated. "Now repeat after me and do try to sound natural. Please say, 'No, Mom, stay where you are.'"
"No, Mom, stay where you are." My voice was barely more than a whisper. "I can see this is going to be difficult." The voice was amused, still light and friendly. "Why don't you walk into another room now so your face doesn't ruin everything? There's no reason for your mother to suffer. As you're walking, please say, 'Mom, please listen to me.' Say it now." "Mom, please listen to me," my voice pleaded. I walked very slowly to the bedroom, feeling Alice's worried stare on my back. I shut the door behind me, trying to think clearly through the terror that gripped my brain.
"There now, are you alone? Just answer yes or no."
"Yes."
"But they can still hear you, I'm sure."
"Yes."
"All right then," the agreeable voice continued. "Say, 'Mom, trust me.'"
"Mom, trust me." This worked out rather better than I expected. I was prepared to wait, but your mother arrived ahead of schedule. It's easier this way, isn't it? Less suspense, less anxiety for you.
I waited.
"Now I want you to listen very carefully. I'm going to need you to get away from your friends. Do you think you can do that? Answer yes or no."
"No."
"I'm sorry to hear that. I was hoping you would be a little more creative than that. Do you think you could get away from them if your mother's life depended on it? Answer yes or no."
Somehow there had to be a way. I remembered that we were going to the airport. Sky Harbor International Airport. Crowded, confusingly laid out.
"Yes."
"That's better. I'm sure it won't be easy. But if I get the slightest hint that you have any company, well, that would be very bad for your mother," the friendly voice promised.
"You must know enough about us by now to realize how quickly I would know if you tried to bring anyone along with you, and how little time I would need to deal with your mother if that was the case. Do you understand?" "Answer yes or no."
"Yes," my voice broke.
"Very good, Bella. Now this is what you have to do. I want you to go to your mother's house. Next to the phone, there will be a number. Call it, and I'll tell you where to go from there." I already knew where I would go and where this would end, but I would follow his instructions exactly.
"Can you do that? Answer yes or no."
"Yes."
"Before noon, please, Bella. I haven't got all day," he said politely.
"Where's Phil?" I asked tersely.
Be careful now, Bella. Wait until I ask you to speak, please."
I waited.
"It's important now that you don't make your friends suspicious when you go back to them. Tell them that your mother called, and that you talked her out of coming home for the time being. Now repeat after me. Thank you, Mom." "Say it now."
"Thank you, Mom." The tears were coming. I tried to fight them back.
"Say, 'I love you, Mom. I'll see you soon.' Say it now."
"I love you, Mom." My voice was thick. "I'll see you soon," I promised.
"Goodbye, Bella. I look forward to seeing you again." He hung up.
I held the phone to my ear. My joints were frozen with terror. I couldn't unbend my fingers to drop it. I knew I had to think, but my head was filled with the sound of my mother's panic. Seconds ticked by while I fought for control. Slowly,
Slowly, my thoughts started to break past that brick wall of pain. To plan. For I had no choices now but one. To go to the mirrored room and die. I had no guarantees. Nothing to give to keep my mother alive. I could only hope that James would be satisfied with winning the game. That beating Edward would be enough. Despair gripped me. There was no way to bargain. Nothing I could offer or withhold that could influence him. But I still had no choice. I had to try. I pushed the terror back as well as I could. My decision was made. It did no good to waste time agonizing over the outcome. I had to think clearly, because Alice and Jasper were waiting for me, and evading them was absolutely essential and absolutely impossible. I was suddenly grateful that Jasper was gone. If he had been here to feel my anguish in the last 5 minutes, how could I have kept them from being suspicious? I choked back the dread, the anxiety, tried to stifle it. I couldn't afford it now. I didn't know when he would return. I concentrated on my escape. I had to hope that my familiarity with the airport would turn the odds in my favor. Somehow I had to keep Alice away. I knew Alice was in the other room waiting for me, curious. But I had to deal with one more thing in private before Jasper was back. I had to accept that I wouldn't see Edward again. Not even one last glimpse of his face to carry with me to the mirror room. It was going to hurt him, and I couldn't say goodbye. I let the waves of torture wash over me, have their way for a time. Then I pushed them back too and went to face Alice. The only expression I could manage was a dull, dead look. I saw her alarm and I didn't wait for her to ask. I had just one script, and I'd never manage improvisation now. My mom was worried. She wanted to come home. But it's okay, I convinced her to stay away. My voice was lifeless. We'll make sure she's fine, Bella, don't worry. I turned away, couldn't let her see my face. My eye fell on a blank page of the hotel stationery on the desk. I went to it slowly, a plan forming. There was an envelope there, too. That was good. Alice, I asked slowly without turning, keeping my voice level. If I write a letter for my mother, would you give it to her? Leave it at the house, I mean? Sure, Bella. Her voice was careful. She could see me coming apart at the seams. I had to keep my emotions under better control. I went into the bedroom again and knelt next to the little bedside table to write. Edward, I wrote. My hand was shaking. The letters were hardly legible. I love you. I am so sorry. He has my mom, and I have to try. I know it may not work. I am so very, very sorry. Don't be angry with Alice and Jasper. If I get away from them, it will be a miracle. Tell them thank you for me. Alice especially, please. And please, please, don't come after him. That's what he wants, I think. I can't bear it if anyone has to be hurt because of me, especially you. Please, this is the only thing I can ask you now. For me. I love you. Forgive me, Bella. I folded the letter carefully and sealed it in the envelope. Eventually he would find it. I only hoped he would understand and listen to me just this once. And then I carefully sealed away my heart. Chapter 22, Hide and Seek. It had taken much less time than I'd thought. All the terror, the despair, the shattering of my heart. The minutes were ticking by more slowly than usual. Jasper still hadn't come back when I returned to Alice. I was afraid to be in the same room with her, afraid that she would guess, and afraid to hide from her for the same reason. I would have thought I was far beyond the ability to be surprised, my thoughts tortured and unstable, but I was surprised when I saw Alice bent over the desk, gripping the edge with two hands. Alice? She didn't react when I called her name, but her head was slowly rocking side to side, and I saw her face. Her eyes were blank, dazed. My thoughts flew to my mother. Was I already too late? I hurried to her side, reaching out automatically to touch her hand. Alice. Jasper's voice whipped, and then he was right behind her, his hands curling over hers, loosening them from their grip on the table. Across the room, the door swung shut with a low click. "What is it?" he demanded. She turned her face away from me into his chest. "Bella," she said. "I'm right here," I replied. Her head twisted around, her eyes locking on mine, their expression still strangely blank. I realized at once that she hadn't been speaking to me. She'd been answering Jasper's question. "What did you see?" I said, and there was no question in my flat, uncaring voice. Jasper looked at me sharply. I kept my expression vacant and waited. His eyes were confused as they flickered swiftly between Alice's face and mine, feeling the chaos, for I could guess what Alice had seen now. I felt a tranquil atmosphere settle around me. I welcomed it, using it to keep my emotions disciplined, under control. Alice, too, recovered herself. "Nothing, really," she answered finally, her voice remarkably calm and convincing. "Just the same room as before." She finally looked at me, her expression smooth and withdrawn. "Did you want breakfast?" "No, I'll eat at the airport." I was very calm, too. Went to the bathroom to shower. Almost as if I were borrowing Jasper's strange extra sense, I could feel Alice's wild, though well-concealed, desperation to have me out of the room, to be alone with Jasper, so she could tell him that they were doing something wrong, that they were going to fail. I got ready methodically, concentrating on each little task. I left my hair down, swirling around me, covering my face. The peaceful mood Jasper created worked its way through me and helped me think clearly, helped me plan. I dug through my bag until I found my sock full of money. I emptied it into my pocket. I was anxious to get to the airport, and glad when we left by 7. I sat alone this time in the back of the dark car. Alice leaned against the door, her face toward Jasper, but behind her sunglasses, shooting glances in my direction every few seconds. "Alice?" I asked indifferently. She was wary. "Yes?" "How does it work, the things that you see?" I stared out the side window, and my voice sounded bored. "Edward said it wasn't definite, that things change." It was harder than I would have thought to say his name. That must have been what alerted Jasper, why a fresh wave of serenity filled the car. "Yes, things change," she murmured. "Hopefully," I thought. "Some things are more certain than others. Like the weather. People are harder. I only see the course they're on while they're on it. Once they change their minds, make a new decision, no matter how small, the whole future shifts." I nodded thoughtfully. "So you couldn't see James in Phoenix until he decided to come here?" "Yes," she agreed, wary again. And she hadn't seen me in the mirror room with James until I'd made the decision to meet him there. I tried not to think about what else she might have seen. I didn't want my panic to make Jasper more suspicious. They would be watching me twice as carefully now anyway, after Alice's vision. This was going to be impossible. We got to the airport. Luck was with me, or maybe it was just good odds. Edward's plane was landing in Terminal 4, the largest terminal, where most flights landed, so it wasn't surprising that his was. But it was the terminal I needed, the biggest, the most confusing. And there was a door on level 3 that might be the only chance. We parked on the 4th floor of the huge garage. I led the way, for once more knowledgeable about my surroundings than they were. We took the elevator down to level 3, where the passengers unloaded. Alice and Jasper spent a long time looking at the departing flights board. I could hear them discussing the pros and cons of New York, Atlanta, Chicago, places I'd never seen and would never see. I waited for my opportunity, impatient, unable to stop my toe from tapping. We sat in the long rows of chairs by the metal detectors, Jasper and Alice pretending to people watch, but really watching me. Every inch I shifted in my seat was followed by a quick glance out of the corner of their eyes. It was hopeless. Should I run? Would they dare to stop me physically in this public place? Or would they simply follow? I pulled the unmarked envelope out of my pocket and set it on top of Alice's black leather bag. She looked at me. "My letter," I said. She nodded, tucking it under the top flap. He would find it soon enough. The minutes passed and Edward's arrival grew closer. It was amazing how every cell in my body seemed to know he was coming, too long for his coming. That made it very hard. I found myself trying to think of excuses to stay, to see him first, and then make my escape. But I knew that was impossible if I was going to have any chance to get away. Several times Alice offered to go get breakfast with me. "Later," I told her. "Not yet." I stared at the arrival board, watching as flight after flight arrived on time. The flight from Seattle crept closer to the top of the board. And then, when I had only 30 minutes to make my escape, the numbers changed. His plane was 10 minutes early. I had no more time. "I think I'll eat now," I said quickly. Alice stood. "I'll come with you." "Do you mind if Jasper comes instead?" I asked. "I'm feeling a little..." I didn't finish the sentence. My eyes were wild enough to convey what I didn't say. Jasper stood up. Alice's eyes were confused, but I saw to my relief, not suspicious. She must be attributing the change in her vision to some maneuver of the trackers, rather than a betrayal by me. Jasper walked silently beside me, his hand on the small of my back, as if he were guiding me. I pretended a lack of interest in the first few airport cafes, my head scanning for what I really wanted. And there it was, around the corner, out of Alice's sharp sight, the level 3 ladies' room. "Do you mind?" I asked Jasper as we passed. "I'll just be a moment." "I'll be right here," he said. As soon as the door shut behind me, I was running. I remembered the time I had gotten lost from this bathroom because it had 2 exits. Outside the far door, it was only a short sprint to the elevators, and if Jasper stayed where he said he would, I'd never be in his line of sight. I didn't look behind me as I ran. This was my only chance, and even if he saw me, I had to keep going. People stared, but I ignored them. Around the corner, the elevators were waiting, and I dashed forward, throwing my hand between the closing doors of a full elevator headed down. I squeezed in beside the irritated passengers and checked to make sure that the button for level 1 had been pushed. It was already lit, and the doors closed. As soon as the door opened, I was off again, to the sound of annoyed murmurs behind me. I slowed myself as I passed the security guards by the luggage carousels, only to break into a run again as the exit doors came into view. I had no way of knowing if Jasper was looking for me yet. I would have only seconds if he was following my scent. I jumped out the automatic doors, nearly smacking into the glass when they opened too slowly. Along the crowded curb, there wasn't a cab in sight. I had no time. Alice and Jasper were either about to realize I was gone, or they already had. They would find me in a heartbeat. A shuttle to the Hyatt was just closing its doors a few feet behind me. "Wait," I called, running, waving at the driver. "This is the shuttle to the Hyatt," the driver said in confusion as he opened the doors. "Yes," I huffed. "That's where I'm going." I hurried up the steps. He looked askance at my luggageless state, but then shrugged, not caring enough to ask. Most of the seats were empty. I sat as far from the other travelers as possible and watched out the window as first the sidewalk and then the airport drifted away. I couldn't help imagining Edward, where he would stand at the edge of the road when he found the end of my trail. I couldn't cry yet, I told myself. I still had a long way to go. My luck held. In front of the Hyatt, a tired-looking couple was getting their last suitcase out of the trunk of a cab. I jumped out of the shuttle and ran to the cab, sliding into the seat behind the driver. The tired couple and the shuttle driver stared at me. I told the surprised cabbie my mother's address. "I need to get there as soon as possible." "That's in Scottsdale," he complained. I threw 420s over the seat. Will that be enough?
Sure, kid, no problem.
I sat back against the seat, folding my arms across my lap. The familiar city began to rush around me, but I didn't look out the windows. I exerted myself to maintain control. I was determined not to lose myself at this point, now that my plan was successfully completed. There was no point in indulging in more terror, more anxiety. My path was set. I just had to follow it now. So, instead of panicking, I closed my eyes and spent the 20 minutes drive with Edward. I imagined that I had stayed at the airport to meet Edward. I visualized how I would stand on my toes the sooner to see his face. How quickly, how gracefully he would move through the crowds of people separating us. And then I would run to close those last few feet between us, reckless as always, and I would be in his marble arms, finally safe. I wondered where we would have gone, north somewhere, so he could be outside in the day, or maybe somewhere very remote, so we could lay in the sun together again. I imagined him by the shore, his skin sparkling like the sea. It wouldn't matter how long we had to hide. To be trapped in a hotel room with him would be a kind of heaven. So many questions I still had for him. I could talk to him forever, never sleeping, never leaving his side. I could see his face so clearly now, almost hear his voice. And despite all the horror and hopelessness, I was fleetingly happy. So involved was I in my escapist daydreams, I lost all track of the seconds racing by.
Hey, what was the number?
The cabbie's question punctured my fantasy, letting all the colors run out of my lovely delusions. Fear, bleak and hard, was waiting to fill the empty space they left behind.
5821?
My voice sounded strangled. The cabbie looked at me, nervous that I was having an episode or something.
Here we are, then.
He was anxious to get me out of his car, probably hoping I wouldn't ask for my change.
Thank you, I whispered.
There was no need to be afraid, I reminded myself. The house was empty. I had to hurry. My mom was waiting for me, frightened, depending on me. I ran to the door, reaching up automatically to grab the key under the eave. I unlocked the door. It was dark inside, empty, normal. I ran to the phone, turning on the kitchen light on my way. There, on the whiteboard, was a 10-digit number written in a small, neat hand. My fingers stumbled over the keypad, making mistakes. I had to hang up and start again. I concentrated only on the buttons this time, carefully pressing each one in turn. I was successful. I held the phone to my ear with a shaking hand. It rang only once.
Hello, Bella,
that easy voice answered.
That was very quick. I'm impressed.
Is my mom all right?
She's perfectly fine. Don't worry, Bella. I have no quarrel with her. Unless you didn't come alone, of course. Light, amused.
I'm alone.
I'd never been more alone in my entire life.
Very good. Now, do you know the ballet studio just around the corner from your home?
Yes. I know how to get there.
Well, then, I'll see you very soon.
I hung up. I ran from the room, through the door, out into the baking heat. There was no time to look back at my house, and I didn't want to see it as it was now, empty, a symbol of fear instead of sanctuary. The last person to walk through those familiar rooms was my enemy. From the corner of my eye, I could almost see my mother standing in the shade of the big eucalyptus tree where I'd played as a child, or kneeling by the little plot of dirt around the mailbox, a cemetery of all the flowers she tried to grow. The memories were better than any reality I would see today, but I raced away from them, toward the corner, leaving everything behind me. I felt so slow, like I was running through wet sand. I couldn't seem to get enough purchase from the concrete. I tripped several times, once falling, catching myself with my hands, scraping them on the sidewalk, and then lurching up to plunge forward again. But at last I made it to the corner. Just another street now. I ran, sweat pouring down my face, gasping. The sun was hot on my skin, too bright as it bounced off the white concrete and blinded me. I felt dangerously exposed. More fiercely than I would have dreamed I was capable of, I wished for the green, protective forests of Forks, of home. When I rounded the last corner onto Cactus, I could see the studio, looking just as I remembered it. The parking lot in front was empty, the vertical blinds in all the windows drawn. I couldn't run anymore. I couldn't breathe. Exertion and fear had gotten the best of me. I thought of my mother to keep my feet moving, one in front of the other. As I got closer, I could see the sign inside the door. It was handwritten on hot pink paper. It said the dance studio was closed for spring break. I touched the handle, tugged on it cautiously. It was unlocked. I fought to catch my breath and opened the door. The lobby was dark and empty, cool, the air conditioner thrumming. The plastic molded chairs were stacked along the walls, and the carpet smelled like shampoo. The west dance floor was dark. I could see through the open viewing window. The east dance floor, the bigger room, was lit, but the blinds were closed on the window. Terror seized me so strongly that I was literally trapped by it. I couldn't make my feet move forward. And then my mother's voice called, "Bella! Bella!" That same tone of hysterical panic. I sprinted to the door, to the sound of her voice. "Bella, you scared me! Don't you ever do that to me again!" Her voice continued as I ran into the long, high-ceilinged room. I stared around me, trying to find where her voice was coming from. I heard her laugh, and I whirled to the sound. There she was on the TV screen, tousling my hair in relief. It was Thanksgiving, and I was 12. We'd gone to see my grandmother in California, the last year before she died. We went to the beach one day, and I'd leaned too far over the edge of the pier. She'd seen my feet flailing, trying to reclaim my balance. "Bella? Bella?" she'd called to me in fear. And then the TV screen was blue. I turned slowly. He was standing very still by the back exit, so still I hadn't noticed him at first. In his hand was a remote control. We stared at each other for a long moment, and then he smiled. He walked toward me quite close, and then passed me to put the remote down next to the VCR. I turned carefully to watch him. "Sorry about that, Bella. But isn't it better that your mother didn't really have to be involved in all this?" His voice was courteous, kind. And suddenly it hit me. My mother was safe. She was still in Florida. She'd never gotten my message. She'd never been terrified by the dark red eyes and the abnormally pale face before me. She was safe. "Yes," I answered, my voice saturated with relief. "You don't sound angry that I tricked you." "I'm not." My sudden high made me brave. What did it matter now? It would soon be over. Charlie and Mom would never be harmed, would never have to fear. I felt almost giddy. Some analytical part of my mind warned me that I was dangerously close to snapping from the stress. "How odd. You really mean it." His dark eyes assessed me with interest. The irises were nearly black, just a hint of ruby around the edges. Thirsty. "I will give your strange coven this much. You humans can be quite interesting. I guess I can see the draw of observing you. It's amazing. Some of you seem to have no sense of your own self-interest at all." He was standing a few feet away from me, arms folded, looking at me curiously. There was no menace in his face or stance. He was so very average-looking. Nothing remarkable about his face or body at all. Just the white skin, the circled eyes I'd grown so used to. He wore a pale blue long-sleeved shirt and faded blue jeans. "I suppose you're going to tell me that your boyfriend will avenge you," he asked. Hopefully, it seemed to me. "No, I don't think so. At least I asked him not to." "And what was his reply to that?" "I don't know. It was strangely easy to converse with this genteel hunter. I left him a letter. How romantic. A last letter. And do you think he will honor it? His voice was just a little harder now, a hint of sarcasm marring his polite tone.
I hope so.
Well, our hopes differ then. You see, this was all just a little too easy, too quick. To be quite honest, I'm disappointed. I expected a much greater challenge. And after all, I only needed a little luck. I waited in silence. When Victoria couldn't get to your father, I had her find out more about you. There was no sense in running all over the planet chasing you down when I could comfortably wait for you in a place of my choosing. So, after I talked to Victoria, I decided to come to Phoenix to pay your mother a visit. I'd heard you say you were going home. At first, I never dreamed you meant it. But then I wondered. Humans can be very predictable. They like to be somewhere familiar, somewhere safe. And wouldn't it be the perfect ploy to go to the last place you should be when you're hiding, the place that you said you'd be? But of course I wasn't sure. It was just a hunch. I usually get a feeling about the prey that I'm hunting, a sixth sense, if you will. I listened to your message when I got to your mother's house, but of course I couldn't be sure where you'd called from. It was very useful to have your number, but you could have been in Antarctica for all I knew, and the game wouldn't work unless you were close by. Then your boyfriend got on a plane to Phoenix. Victoria was monitoring them for me, naturally. In a game with this many players, I couldn't be working alone. And so they told me what I'd hoped, that you were here after all. I was prepared. I'd already been through your charming home movies. And then it was simply a matter of the bluff. Very easy, you know. Not really up to my standards. So you see, I'm hoping you're wrong about your boyfriend. Edward, isn't it? I didn't answer. The bravado was wearing off. I sensed that he was coming to the end of his gloat. It wasn't meant for me anyway. There was no glory in beating me, a weak human. Would you mind very much if I left a little letter of my own for your Edward? He took a step back and touched a palm-sized digital video camera balanced carefully on top of the stereo. A small red light indicated that it was already running. He adjusted it a few times, widened the frame. I stared at him in horror. I'm sorry, but I just don't think he'll be able to resist hunting me after he watches this. And I wouldn't want him to miss anything. It was all for him, of course. You're simply a human who unfortunately was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and indisputably running with the wrong crowd, I might add. He stepped toward me, smiling. Before we begin, I felt a curl of nausea in the pit of my stomach as he spoke. This was something I had not anticipated. I would just like to rub it in just a little bit. The answer was there all along, and I was so afraid Edward would see that and ruin my fun. It happened once, oh, ages ago. The one and only time my prey escaped me. You see, the vampire who was so stupidly fond of this little victim made the choice that your Edward was too weak to make. When the old one knew I was after his little friend, he stole her from the asylum where he worked. I never will understand the obsession some vampires seem to form with you humans. And as soon as he freed her, he made her safe. She didn't even seem to notice the pain, poor little creature. She'd been stuck in that black hole of a cell for so long. 100 years earlier, and she would have been burned at the stake for her visions. In the 1920s, it was the asylum and the shock treatments. When she opened her eyes, strong with her fresh youth, it was like she'd never seen the sun before. The old vampire made her a strong new vampire, and there was no reason for me to touch her then. He sighed. I destroyed the old one in vengeance. Alice, I breathed, astonished. Yes, your little friend. I was surprised to see her in the clearing. So I guess her coven ought to be able to derive some comfort from this experience. I get you, but they get her. The one victim who escaped me. Quite an honor, actually. And she did smell so delicious. I still regret that I never got to taste. She smelled even better than you do. Sorry. I don't mean to be offensive. You have a very nice smell. Floral, somehow. He took another step toward me, till he was just inches away. He lifted a lock of my hair and sniffed at it delicately. Then he gently patted the strand back into place, and I felt his cool fingertips against my throat. He reached up to stroke my cheek once quickly with his thumb, his face curious. I wanted so badly to run, but I was frozen. I couldn't even flinch away. No, he murmured to himself as he dropped his hand. I don't understand, he sighed. Well, I suppose we should get on with it, and then I can call your friends and tell them where to find you, and my little message. I was definitely sick now. There was pain coming. I could see it in his eyes. It wouldn't be enough for him to win, to feed and go. There would be no quick end like I'd been counting on. My knees began to shake, and I was afraid I was going to fall. He stepped back and began to circle, casually, as if he were trying to get a better view of a statue in a museum. His face was still open and friendly as he decided where to start. Then he slumped forward into a crouch I recognized, and his pleasant smile slowly widened, grew, till it wasn't a smile at all, but a contortion of teeth, exposed and glistening. I couldn't help myself. I tried to run. As useless as I knew it would be, as weak as my knees already were, panic took over and I bolted for the emergency door. He was in front of me in a flash. I didn't see if he used his hand or his foot. It was too fast. A crushing blow struck my chest. I felt myself flying backward and then heard the crunch as my head bashed into the mirrors. The glass buckled, some of the pieces shattering and splintering on the floor beside me. I was too stunned to feel the pain. I couldn't breathe yet. He walked toward me slowly. That's a very nice effect, he said, examining the mess of glass, his voice friendly again. I thought this room would be visually dramatic for my little film. That's why I picked this place to meet you. It's perfect, isn't it? I ignored him, scrambling on my hands and knees, crawling toward the other door. He was over me at once, his foot stepping down hard on my leg. I heard the sickening snap before I felt it. But then I did feel it, and I couldn't hold back my scream of agony. I twisted up to reach for my leg, and he was standing over me, smiling. Would you like to rethink your last request? He asked pleasantly. His toe nudged my broken leg, and I heard a piercing scream. With a shock, I realized it was mine. Wouldn't you rather have Edward try to find me? He prompted. No, I croaked. No, Edward, don't. And then something smashed into my face, throwing me back into the broken mirrors. Over the pain of my leg, I felt the sharp rip across my scalp where the glass cut into it, and then the warm wetness began to spread through my hair with alarming speed. I could feel it soaking the shoulder of my shirt, hear it dripping on the wood below. The smell of it twisted my stomach. Through the nausea and dizziness, I saw something that gave me a sudden, final shred of hope. His eyes, merely intent before, now burned with an uncontrollable need. The blood, spreading crimson across my white shirt, pooling rapidly on the floor, was driving him mad with thirst. No matter his original intentions, he couldn't draw this out much longer. Let it be quick now, was all I could hope as the flow of blood from my head sucked my consciousness away with it. My eyes were closing. I heard, as if from underwater, the final growl of the hunter. I could see, through the long tunnels my eyes had become, his dark shape coming toward me. With my last effort, my hand instinctively raised to protect my face. My eyes closed, and I drifted. Chapter 23, The Angel. As I drifted, I dreamed. Where I floated under the dark water, I heard the happiest sound my mind could conjure up, as beautiful, as uplifting, as it was ghastly. It was another snarl, a deeper, wilder roar that rang with fury.